The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
This is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. Today we're going to be reading a couple more stories from our old friend Lafcadio Hearn, who did the Japanese folk tales. Got a couple crazy ones here, which were pretty fun to read, and I hope they're fun to listen to, so let's get started. First, with the story of Chugoro. A long time ago, there lived in the Koshikawa quarter of Yedo a samurai named Suzuki, whose yashiki, or noble's residence, was situated on the bank of the Yedogawa, not far from the bridge called Nakanohashi. And among the retainers of this Suzuki, there was an Ashigaru, which was the lowest class of retainers in military service, named Chugoro. Chugoro was a handsome lad, very amiable and clever, and much liked by his comrades. For several years, Chugoro remained in the service of Suzuki, conducting himself so well that no fault was found with him. But at last, the other Ashigaru discovered that Chugoro was in the habit of leaving the Ashiki every night by way of the garden and staying out until a little before dawn. At first, they said nothing to him about this strange behavior, for his absences did not interfere with any regular duty, and were supposed to be caused by some love affair. But after a time, he began to look pale and weak, and his comrades, suspecting some serious folly, decided to interfere. Therefore, one evening, just as he was about to steal away from the house, an elderly retainer called him aside and said, "Chugoro, my lad, we know that you go out every night and stay away until early morning, and we have observed that you are looking unwell. We fear that you are keeping bad company and injuring your health. And unless you can give a good reason for your conduct, we shall think that it is our duty to report this matter to the chief officer. In any case, since we are your comrades and friends, it is but right that we should know why you go out at night, contrary to the custom of this house." Chugoro appeared to be very much embarrassed and alarmed by these words. But after a short silence, he passed into the garden, followed by his comrade. When the two found themselves well out of hearing of the rest, Chugoro stopped and said, "I will now tell you everything, but I must entreat you to keep my secret. If you repeat what I tell you, some great misfortune may befall me. It was in the early part of last spring, about 5 months ago, that I first began to go out at night on account of a love affair. One evening, when I was returning to the Yashiki after a visit to my parents, I saw a woman standing by the riverside, not far from the main gateway. She was dressed like a person of high rank, and I thought it was strange that a woman so finely dressed should be standing there alone at such an hour. But I did not think that I had any right to question her, and I was about to pass her by without speaking when she stepped forward and pulled me by the sleeve. Then I saw that she was very young and handsome. 'Will you not walk with me as far as the bridge?' she said. 'I have something to tell you.' Her voice was very soft and pleasant, and she smiled as she spoke, and her smile was hard to resist. So I walked with her toward the bridge, and on the way she told me that she had often seen me going in and out of the Yashiki and had taken a fancy to me. 'I wish to have you for my husband,' she said. 'If you can like me, we shall be able to make each other very happy.' I did not know how to answer her, but I thought her very charming. As we neared the bridge, she pulled my sleeve again and led me down the bank to the very edge of the river. 'Come in with me,' she whispered, and pulled me toward the water. It is deep there, as you know, and I became all at once afraid of her and tried to turn back. She smiled and caught me by the wrist and said, 'Oh, you must never be afraid with me.' And somehow, with the touch of her hand, I became more helpless than a child. I felt like a person in a dream who tries to run and cannot move hand or foot. Into the deep water she stepped and drew me with her, and I neither saw nor heard nor felt anything more until I found myself walking beside her through what seemed to be a great palace full of light. I was neither wet nor cold, Everything around me was dry and warm and beautiful. I could not understand where I was, nor how I had come there. The woman led me by the hand. We passed through room after room, through ever so many rooms, all empty but very fine, until we entered into a guest room of 1,000 mats. Before a great alcove at the farther end, lights were burning and cushions laid as for a feast, but I saw no guests. She led me to the place of honor by the alcove and seated herself in front of me and said, "This is my home. Do you think that you could be happy with me here?" As she asked the question, she smiled, and I thought that her smile was more beautiful than anything else in the world, and out of my heart I answered, "Yes." In the same moment, I remembered the story of Urashima, and I imagined that she might be the daughter of a god, but I feared to ask her any questions. Presently, maidservants came in, bearing sake and many dishes, which they set before us. Then she who sat before me said, "Tonight shall be our bridal night, because you like me, and this is our wedding feast. We pledged ourselves to each other for the time of 7 existences, and after the banquet we were conducted to a bridal chamber which had been prepared for us." It was yet early in the morning when she awoke me and said, "My dear one, you are now indeed my husband, but for reasons which I cannot tell you and which you must not ask, it is necessary that our marriage remain secret. To keep you here until daybreak would cost both of us our lives. Therefore, do not, I beg of you, feel displeased because I must now send you back to the house of your lord. You can come to me tonight again, and every night hereafter, at the same hour that we first met. Wait always for me by the bridge, and you will not have to wait long. But remember, above all things, that our marriage must be a secret, and that if you talk about it, we shall probably be separated forever." I promised to obey her in all things, remembering the fate of Urashima, and she conducted me through many rooms, all empty and beautiful, to the entrance. There she again took me by the wrist, and everything suddenly became dark, and I knew nothing more until I found myself standing alone on the river bank, close to the Nakanohashi. When I got back to the Yashiki, the temple bells had not yet begun to ring. In the evening, I went again to the bridge at the hour she had named, and I found her waiting for me. She took me with her, as before, into the deep water and into the wonderful place where we had passed our bridal night. And every night since then, I have met and parted from her in the same way. Tonight she will certainly be waiting for me, and I would rather die than disappoint her. Therefore, I must go. But let me again entreat you, my friend, never to speak to anyone about what I have told you." The elder Ashigaru was surprised and alarmed by this story. He felt that Chugoro had told him the truth, and the truth suggested unpleasant possibilities. Probably the whole experience was an illusion, and an illusion produced by some evil power for malevolent end. Nevertheless, if really bewitched, the lad was rather to be pitied than blamed, and any forcible interference would be likely to result in mischief. So the Ashigaru answered kindly, "I shall never speak of what you have told me, never at least while you remain alive and well. Go and meet the woman, but beware of her. I fear that you are being deceived by some wicked spirit." Chugoro only smiled at the old man's warning and hastened away. Several hours later, he re-entered the Yashiki with a strangely dejected look. "Did you meet her?" whispered his comrade. "No," replied Chugoro. "She was not there. For the first time, she was not there. I think that she will never meet me again. I did wrong to tell you. I was very foolish to break my promise." The other vainly tried to console him. Chugoro lay down and spoke no word more. He was trembling from head to foot as if he had caught a chill. When the temple bells announced the hour of dawn, Chugoro tried to get up and fell back senseless. He was evidently sick, deathly sick. A Chinese physician was summoned. "Why, the man has no blood. exclaimed the doctor after a careful examination. There is nothing but water in his veins. It will be very difficult to save him. What maleficence is this? Everything was done that could be done to save Chugoro's life, but in vain. He died as the sun went down. Then his comrade related the whole story. "Ah, I might have suspected as much," exclaimed the doctor. "No power could have saved him. He was not the first whom she destroyed." "Who is she? Or what is she?" the Ashigaru asked. "A fox woman?" "No. She has been haunting this river from ancient time. She loves the blood of the young." "A serpent woman? A dragon woman?" "No, no. If you were to see her under that bridge by daylight, she would appear to you a very loathsome creature." "But what kind of a creature?" "Simply a frog. A great and ugly frog." And that's the end of the first tale. Moral of the story is, if a lady takes you to an underwater palace, it's probably not a good thing. And we're going on to the next tale, but first, a message from our sponsor.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you can show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support this station to keep it on the air, and every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
Living Recovery is a peer recovery support center located in downtown Pittsfield. We welcome all who have struggled with addiction or those affected by another's addiction.
What have you learned while being involved at Living in Recovery?
I can own my own recovery path.
What has been your experience at Living in Recovery?
It's a family.
What keeps you coming back to Living in Recovery?
The live events.
For more information on Living in Recovery, visit our website, livingrecoverypittsfield.org, or phone us at 413-570-8243.
Let's have a party with all our friends. Let's have a good time. Don't let it end. We got the people.
Hey, friends. If you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR.
And we're back. For those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners, reading some folk tales by Lafcadio Hearn, who collected a bunch of Japanese folk tales in the 19th century. And we're reading the second tale, which is The Mirror Maiden. In the period of the Ashikaga shogunate, the shrine of Ogawachi Myōjin at Minami Ise fell into decay, and the daimyo of the district, the Lord Kitahatake, found himself unable, by reason of war and other circumstances, to provide for the reparation of the building. Then the Shinto priest in charge, Matsumura Hyogo, sought help at Kyoto from the great daimyo Hosokawa, who was known to have influence with the shogun. The Lord Hosogawa received the priest kindly and promised to speak to the shogun about the condition of Ogawachi Myojin. But he said that, in any event, a grant for the restoration of the temple could not be made without due investigation and considerable delay. And he advised Matsumura to remain in the capital while the matter was being arranged. Matsumura therefore brought his family to Kyoto and rented a house in the old Kyugoku quarter. This house, although handsome and spacious, had been long unoccupied. It was said to be an unlucky house. On the northeast side of it there was a well, and several former tenants had drowned themselves in that well without any known cause. But Matsumura, being a Shinto priest, had no fear of evil spirits, and he soon made himself very comfortable in his new home. In the summer of that year there was a great drought. For months no rain had fallen in the five home provinces. The riverbeds dried up, the wells failed, and even in the capital there was a dearth of water. But the well in Matsumura's garden remained nearly full, and the water, which was very cold and clear with a faint bluish tinge, seemed to be supplied by a spring. During the hot season, many people came from all parts of the city to beg for water, and Matsumura allowed them to draw as much as they pleased. Nevertheless, the supply did not appear to be diminished. But one morning, the dead body of a young servant who had been sent from a neighboring residence to fetch water was found floating in the well. No cause for a suicide could be imagined, and Matsumura, remembering many unpleasant stories about the well, began to suspect some invisible malevolence. He went to examine the well with the intention of having a fence built around it, and while standing there alone, he was startled by a sudden motion in the water, as of something alive. The motion soon ceased, and then he perceived, clearly reflected in the still surface, the figure of a young woman, apparently about 19 or 20 years of age. She seemed to be occupied with her toilet. He distinctly saw her touching her lips with beni, a kind of rouge used to color the lips. At first her face was visible in profile only, but presently she turned towards him and smiled. Immediately he felt a strange shock at his heart, and a dizziness came upon him like the dizziness of wine, and everything became dark except that smiling face, white and beautiful as moonlight, and always seeming to grow more beautiful, and to be drawing him down, down, down into the darkness. But with a desperate effort he recovered his will and closed his eyes. When he opened them again, the face was gone and the light had returned, and he found himself leaning down over the curb of the well. A moment more of that dizziness, a moment more of that dazzling lure, and he would never again have looked upon the sun. Returning to the house, he gave orders to his people not to approach the well under any circumstances or allow any person to draw water from it, and the next day he had a strong fence built round the well. About a week after the fence had been built, the long drought was broken by a great rainstorm, accompanied by wind and lightning and thunder. Thunder so tremendous that the whole city shook to the rolling of it, as if shaken by an earthquake. For 3 days and 3 nights the downpour and the lightning and the thunder continued, and the Kamogawa rose as it had never risen before, carrying away many bridges. During the third night of the storm, at the hour of the ox, there was heard a knocking at the door of the priest's dwelling, and the voice of a woman pleading for admittance. But Matsumura, warned by his experience at the well, forbade his servants to answer the appeal. He went himself to the entrance and asked, "Who calls?" A feminine voice responded, "Pardon, it is I, Yayoi. I have something to say to Matsumura-sama. Something of great moment. Please open." Matsumura half opened the door, very cautiously, and he saw the same beautiful face that had smiled upon him from the well. But it was not smiling now. It had a very sad look. "Into my house you shall not come," the priest exclaimed. "You are not a human being, but a well person. Why do you thus wickedly try to delude and destroy people?" The well person made answer in a voice musical as a tinkling of jewels. It is of that very matter that I want to speak. I have never wished to injure human beings. But from ancient time a poison dragon dwelt in that well. He was the master of the well, and because of him the well was always full. Long ago I fell into the water there, and so became subject to him, and he had power to make me lure people to death, in order that he might drink their blood. But now the heavenly ruler has commanded the dragon to dwell hereafter in the lake called Tori no Ike in the province of Shinshu, and the gods have decided that he shall never be allowed to return to the city. So tonight, after he had gone away, I was able to come out to beg for your kindly help. There is now very little water in the well because of the dragon's departure, and if you will order search to be made, my body will be found there. I pray you to save my body from the well without delay, and I shall certainly return your benevolence. So saying, she vanished into the night. Before dawn, the tempest had passed, and when the sun arose, there was no trace of cloud in the pure blue sky. Matsumura sent at an early hour for well cleaners to search the well. Then, to everybody's surprise, the well proved to be almost dry. It was easily cleaned, and at the bottom of it were found some hair ornaments of a very ancient fashion, and a metal mirror of curious form, but no trace of any body, animal or human. Matsumura imagined, however, that the mirror might yield some explanation of the mystery, for every such mirror is a weird thing, having a soul of its own, and the soul of a mirror is feminine. This mirror, which seemed to be very old, was deeply crusted with scurf, but when it had been carefully cleaned by the priest's order, it proved to be of rare and costly workmanship, and there were wonderful designs upon the back of it, also several characters. Some of the characters had become indistinguishable, but there could still be discerned part of a date and ideograph signifying third month, the third day. Now the third month used to be termed Yayoi, meaning the month of increase, and the third day of the third month, which is a festival day, is still called Yayoi no Seku. Remembering that the well person called herself Yayoi, Matsumura felt almost sure that his ghostly visitant had been none other than the soul of the mirror. He therefore resolved to treat the mirror with all the consideration due to a spirit. After having caused it to be carefully repolished and resilvered, he had a case of precious wood made for it, and a particular room in the house prepared to receive it. On the evening of the same day that it had been respectfully deposited in that room, Yayoi herself unexpectedly appeared before the priest as he sat alone in his study. She looked even more lovely than before, but the light of her beauty was now soft as the light of a summer moon shining through pure white clouds. After having humbly saluted Matsumura, she said in her sweetly tinkling voice, "Now that you have saved me from solitude and sorrow, I have come to thank you. I am indeed, as you suppose, the spirit of the mirror. It was in the time of the Emperor Saimei that I was first brought here from Kudara, and I dwelt in the August residence until the time of the Emperor Saga, when I was augustly bestowed upon Lady Kamo, Nashino of the Imperial Court. Thereafter, I became an heirloom in the house of Fujiwara, and so remained until the period of Hōgen, when I was dropped into the well. There I was left and forgotten during the years of the Great War. The master of the well was a venomous dragon who used to live in a lake that once covered a great part of this district. After the lake had been filled by government order, in order that houses might be built upon the place of it, the dragon took possession of the well, and when I fell into the well, I became subject to him, and he compelled me to lure many people to their deaths. But the gods have banished him forever. Now I have one more favor to beseech. I entreat that you will cause me to be offered up to the shogun, the Lord Yoshimasa, who by descent is related to my former possessors. Do me but this last great kindness, and it will bring you good fortune. But I have also to warn you of a danger. In this house, after tomorrow, you must not stay, because it will be destroyed." And with these words of warning, Yayoi disappeared. Matsumura was able to profit by this premonition. He removed his people and his belongings to another district the next day. And almost immediately afterwards, another storm arose, even more violent than the first, causing a flood which swept away the house in which he had been residing. Some time later, by favor of the Lord Hosokawa, Matsumura was enabled to obtain an audience of the Shogun Yoshimasa, to whom he presented the mirror together with a written account of its wonderful history. Then the prediction of the spirit of the mirror was fulfilled, for the Shogun, greatly pleased with the strange gift, not only bestowed costly presents upon Matsumura, but also made an ample grant of money for the rebuilding of the temple of Ogawachi Myojin. And that one had a much happier ending than the first one, so... All right, so that's it for today's episode. As usual, I enjoyed reading to you, and I hope you enjoyed listening. This is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at Pittsfield Radio.